Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 72. The slaying of the demon Jarasandha, text 8, 9, and 10. Translation for text 8. Lord Krishna is speaking to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Indeed, my Lord, for the great sages, the forefathers, and the demigods, and for our well-wishing friends, and indeed for all living entities, the performance of this king of Vedic sacrifices is desirable. Text 9. First, conquer all kings, bring the earth under your control, and collect all the required paraphernalia. Then execute this great sacrifice. Text 10. These brothers of yours, O king, have taken birth as partial expansions of the demigods ruling various planets. And you are so self-controlled that you have conquered even me, who am unconquerable for those who cannot control their senses. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna, it is said that Bhim was born of the demigod Vayu, and that Arjuna was born of the demigod Indra, whereas King Yudhisthira himself was born of the demigod Yamaraj. Srila Prabhupada goes on to state, Lord Krishna told King Yudhisthira that he becomes conquered by the love of one who has conquered his senses. One who has not conquered his senses cannot conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the secret of devotional service. To conquer the senses means to engage them constantly in the service of the Lord. The specific qualification of all the Pandava brothers was that they always engage their senses in the service of the Lord. One who thus engages his senses becomes purified, and with purified senses, one can actually render service to the Lord. The Lord can thus be conquered by the devotee through loving transcendental service. End of Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book extract. Om Gyanachimanandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Uritananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare. Lord Krishna is verifying and confirming Yudhisthira Maharaj's decision to perform this king of all major Vedic sacrifices. Lord Krishna is telling him that this yajna, this sacrifice, is desirable for the well-being of all living entities. The great sages, even the departed forefathers, the ancestors, the demigods, all the friends of the Yadus, and indeed for all living beings. With our ordinary material senses, it's hard for us to understand how our doing devotional service is the best thing for all living entities. The pressure of the material energy pushes upon you to consider yourself as distinct completely from the Supreme Lord. And therefore, naturally, you begin to think, it's nice doing devotional service, but what's that going to do for others, especially those who are near and dear to my body? This is the effect of illusory energy that fragments your vision. Okay, granted, doing devotional service will help me. I notice I've reduced my suffering, I've reduced my stress. But what about my family members? What about those who are near and dear to me? My tribe, my village, my nation? How will my doing devotional service benefit them? To get to the bottom of this doubt, we have to understand what is the root of all existence. That's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita clearly presents what is the root of existence and where we should apply our endeavors. It is not just poetry that we say, water the tree at the root and all the branches will blossom. This is a scientific fact which only a bhakta, only a devotee, can understand. Without clear understanding of this point, you're going to be in anxiety. You'll concede the point that, well, I am not an atheist. I do believe in God, and I should be doing service to the Supreme Lord. I accept that. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to take an animal birth in my next life. But what about family members? What about friends? What about, sometimes people are even concerned about the world. Before I came to Krishna consciousness, that was my big obstacle. What does this bhakti do for the world? As if I was doing something for the world. What are the practical, economic, and political effects of bhakti yoga? So, these days, other than the climate, most people aren't concerned about the world. They're concerned about themselves and those near and dear to them, your family members. And your family members put guilt trips on you, right? It's very nice that you are doing this Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But what's that doing for us? How much money is it putting in our bank account? How much is the bhakti yoga making you do what we want you to do? They see things in that way. Because they're on the bodily platform. They don't understand how Krishna is the seed-giving father of all living entities. And therefore, if you please Krishna, you have done the best thing to please others. Even in the case of Hiranyakashipu, the most terroristic demon who made anything Al-Qaeda is reputed to have done look like just child's play. Hiranyakashipu is called Sri Hiranyakashipu in the Bhagavatam because he's going to have the great honor to be killed by Lord Nrsimhadeva. And he had the rarest benediction that his son was Prahlad Maharaj. Simply because his son was Prahlad Maharaj, in spite of Hiranyakashipu's extraordinary terrorism, he benefited in his next birth. If this can happen to Hiranyakashipu, what to speak of those who are near and dear to you? Because of Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu benefited in his next life. Indeed, Lord Nrsimhadeva told him, not only Hiranyakashipu, your father, but so many generations before you in your family line will also benefit because of your performing pure devotional service. Just think, Hiranyakashipu tried to kill Prahlad. Yet when the Lord asked Prahlad for a benediction, the Lord asked Prahlad, what benediction do you want from me? After the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad said, I'm concerned about my father. What will be his destination? And then Lord Nrsimhadeva explained, you are a devotee, therefore anyone in your family, for so many generations, not even this present generation, but for so many generations in the past, they'll all be benefited. But we don't see all that with our mundane perception. We don't fully understand the potency of devotional service. The Pandavas were expert, as Srila Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book. They always had their senses engaged in service. That's the only way there's going to be peace and happiness. When we get that point into our head, then we can really start to progress. What was that quote from Srila Prabhupada? Buddha Hari Prabhu was telling me the other day about controlling the mind.
Oh, you were going to chant?
Yes.
When you said that, what's the question of controlling the mind? Is chanting?
Yes. Yes, devotees were worried. How to control the mind? My mind is always going this way and that way. And Srila Prabhupada answered, there's no question of your controlling the mind. Just hear the holy name. You see, that totally changes the whole, our whole approach. It's not that you have to battle the mind. If you just connect the mind to hearing about Krishna, you've won the battle. So therefore, a devotee's life is always about connecting the mind to hearing about Krishna. then there's victory. You don't have to feel hopeless. Oh, my mind. I'll never conquer it. I'll always be at its mercy. As soon as you feel defeat coming by the mind, connect it to hearing about Krishna, and you'll win. Every time. It's like training a dog. If you've ever had a dog, which most of you have. But you can imagine what it's like to train a dog. You sit. Sit. I said, sit. So simply with the mind. How do you beat up on your mind? Whether you see yourself as beating on your mind or coaxing your mind, how do you deal with your mind? Just connect it to hearing about Krishna. That's all. In this age of Kali, you can't take your mind on directly. Okay, mind, I'm going to show you who's boss. The modes of nature will make a fool out of you. Before you know it, your mind will be spinning into so many directions. Past memories, future projections, present hopes. Things you've seen in the past life. Things you've seen on billboards while walking into the city. They'll all just pop out of your mind in the most crazy ways. So therefore, our program is just connect the mind to hearing about Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vayarivasudhaskaram, the mind is as uncontrollable as the wind is. But when the mind's connected to devotional service, hearing about Krishna, planning devotional service, how to please Krishna, then the mind becomes subdued. And if you do that year after year, you will see the victory. You'll see the progress. So don't torment yourself. Oh, my mind is so wild. How will I be able to go on in Krishna consciousness with a mind like this? I thought I had it under control, and it pops out and attacks me again. You think, oh, this has been such a blissful week. My mind has been so subdued and peaceful. Then all of a sudden, it mugs you. It jumps out of a dark corner. And, oh, does this Krishna consciousness really work? I thought I was really doing good. Right? Isn't it like that? I wonder if anyone else goes through this. Don't become depressed or discouraged. Just connect the mind to hearing about Krishna. That's why an enthusiastic devotee is one who knows how to seize the opportunity for glorifying Krishna. Just like materialists seize opportunities for acquisition, for sense gratification. A devotee seizes opportunities for glorifying Krishna, hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna. You have to have a sense of acquisition, even greed. Of course, spiritual greed is a very high platform, which can't be conceived with ordinary senses. But that's where we should be heading. First, you have to have the acquisitiveness, just like materialists have about consumer items. Oh, look at that latest computer. I've got to have it. Look at that latest model of car. Yeah, it has to be mine. Or, I guess, ladies, it's fashions. I remember as a little boy, I was 5 years old, and my mother and her girlfriend, the next door neighbor, after church, they take all the kids to church, and then after church they would go to the shops in the city, which were all closed then on a Sunday, and they would go to the big fashion shops and just window gaze, you know, little kids are tagging along, you know, just 5 years old, and they just go. My mother and her girlfriend would just go from window to window. Oh, look at that! It's fabulous. Can you believe it? Ooh! I still remember as a 5-year-old kid, I was like, oh, this is boring. Let's go home so I can watch the baseball game. They would just spend an hour with the kids tagging along. Oh, girl, look at that one. Ooh. So, we should have that acquisitiveness about glorifying Krishna. That is a sign, a healthy sign of spiritual progress. Know how to seize the opportunity for hearing about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna. And then, you'll know how to defeat the mind. Because when you're hearing about Krishna, your mind is in connection to Krishna. It bows down, it becomes subdued. Even it may try to act up while you're hearing about Krishna, but it'll become overcome. Don't worry. This is the solution as given by the Pandavas. Yudhisthira Maharaj knows what he's doing. And Krishna has confirmed that all living entities will benefit by this king of yajñas. The missing point in so-called civilization today is that people have no idea that the resources of the world are meant to be offered to the Supreme Lord. Everyone is very happy to discover new resources for their own purposes. Nations base their wealth upon whether there are stocks of natural resources in the country. Just like I was discussing with Banahari Prabhu and Anirudha Prabhu yesterday. They were discussing the terrain, the geography of Australia. So I brought up a remark that an ex-Prime Minister of New Zealand said about the two countries. So New Zealand is a theme park, but Australia is a quarry. In other words, there's a big spread of land with all sorts of natural resources under the ground. Gold and mineral ores and like that. And so, you know, on the coast, the people live and there's some green. But most of the country's desert. It's the world's most arid continent. And now the world's most arid continent is in the greatest drought that they've ever had. So, people rejoice when they discover new resources in their country. Like now, off the shores of Brazil, they've discovered huge reservoirs of oil. Everyone is happy. Maybe there won't be an oil shortage. No one thinks the gold, the oil, the minerals are meant for yajna. No one thinks like that. Why did Krishna tell Yudhisthira Maharaj, first conquer all kings, bring the earth under your control, and collect all the required paraphernalia, then execute this great sacrifice? He told him that because the Rajasuya Yajna requires valuable resources, precious jewels, beyond what we think the earth now has the capacity to supply. Therefore, in order to perform that yajna, you indeed had to be emperor of the world. That's the only way you could gather all the resources. The materialistic tendency is to think, oh, why all these resources for yajna? Krishna says, offer him a leaf, fruit, flower, or water. So, go to the mandir, put a little leaf down in front of the altar, a few grains of rice, a carton of milk, a bottle of milk, leave it back. Krishna says, right? And keep everything else for ourselves. This is religion at its best in the world today. You give God a little bit and keep it all, keep all the vast resources of the world for yourself. But this policy is not working. We're trying to show people the happiness from yajna. Everything about bhakti yoga is yajna, offering our senses to the Supreme Lord in the fire of sacrifice. So whether you live in the temple or in the temple community, you want to constantly strive to engage your senses in yajna, and then everyone will benefit. What is the hardest thing for us to get over in our hearts? The hardest thing to get over in our hearts is, how can it be that I'll be happy if I don't act for myself? It's really a hard knot. Hridaya gandham. It's really deep in the heart. If I'm going to be happy, I've got to please myself. I've got to make my own program, my own plans, how to please me and those in relation to me. It's so deep-set, isn't it? And the battle in Krishna consciousness comes because bhakti is all about doing yajna for the Supreme Lord, satisfying the Supreme Lord. And so, it's like you're carrying this heavy burden from the past on your shoulders. Satisfy me, satisfy me. Meanwhile, you're engaged in devotional service. So this monkey on your back from so many births is always kicking at you. What about you? What about you? What about your senses? What about your mind? So you're trying to serve Krishna and you got this monkey on your back. It's always harassing you. Think about you. Think about your desires. What about your lusts? What about your needs? Come on, come on. So then, not only are you carrying this monkey of your own desires on your back while you're engaged in the most service, but then, if you happen to have a family, generally that means you're from India if you have a family. So, then you're concerned, what about the family? What about their lusts, their desires, their needs? And their guilt trips that they're laying on me. So all these monkeys are on your back. You're carrying them, trying to serve Krishna. That's why we need to hear Bhagavatam every morning. Indeed, every morning. Because we're so conditioned. When we hear Bhagavatam, we associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything is clear. But we have to do this every day. Don't think, oh, I'm so advanced, I've internalized it all. I can just wander freely and do what I like and I have that deep Krishna understanding in me, you know? Don't make excuses like that. Just like Nanda Mandir was telling me yesterday, some of the excuses that are given to him when he meets persons from his homeland on book distribution. He was explaining that they're the most difficult. Because they know how to manufacture the most expert excuses. Why not to serve Krishna? Why not to take a book? Please. Oh. Where are you from? Oh, Bangalore or Chandigarh? Oh, they have such a nice book for you. Well, to tell you the truth, this book is very pure. And at our home is very impure. We are eating meat, doing so many things. Our home is too impure for us to put such a book in. Brilliant excuse. Is one even better? No, I will not take the book now. When I will come to the temple and get the book there and then give the money right in front of the deity. But if it's not as effective if I buy the book now and give you the money. I want to give the money right in front of the deity. Brilliant misuse of intelligence. This is the nature of being a conditioned soul, to always come up with anxieties and excuses and rationalizations why not to trust the yajna process. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the different types of yajnas: sacrifice of knowledge, sacrifice of hearing. And after this detailed technical description of the different types of yajnas or sacrifices, what does Krishna say? Tadviti pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. If you actually want to know the truth about what I've explained before, Arjuna, all these different types of yajna, then you approach my representative, you approach a guru. You inquire submissively, you render service. And then you'll be able to understand the truth about yajna. So here in this chapter, Yudhisthira is demonstrating that truth. And Krishna is confirming, you actually know how to satisfy all living beings, even departed ancestors. You know how to satisfy them? Therefore, please perform this yajna. Bring the earth under your control. Gather the enormous precious gems and scarce resources. Scarce meaning very luxurious. Gather ample profuse quantities of all the resources necessary and perform this Rajasuya Yajna. Now, why should this kind of thinking appear to be strange to you? Well, why should Yudhisthira conquer the whole world just to gather immense resources required for a yajna? But what happens if you don't do that? Now you see nations trying to conquer the whole world to get enough oil to fuel their military operations, their cars. One way or another, things happen. If you don't do things for Krishna, you'll do them for Maya. So you may wonder, well, is this really good for world peace that Yudhisthira Maharaj is conquering all kings and bringing the earth under his control just to perform yajna? But if you don't do that, then you'll be out conquering the world for the sake of gathering resources for your own sense gratification. This is the way things work. Once we realize our life is meant for yajna, then we can rearrange all our priorities. But remember, the big problem in the heart, kridayajantama, this hard knot in the heart is always saying, for me, for me, for me, how am I being treated? Right? How's everyone treating me? How are the Vaishnavas treating me? Have they realized my extraordinary value? How much appreciation do I get every day? How much praise do I get? This is our constant hang-up. What's in it for me? Forgetting that Krishna is the self of the self. Of course, we want to appreciate devotees. That's a great service, to appreciate and relish devotees for their qualities, for their activities. But a real devotee never demands appreciation. What to speak of demanding respect? So this is the problem in the heart. What's in it for me? How is my body feeling? How is my mind feeling? How does devotional service make my body feel today? It's actually disgusting. But this is the nature of conditioned life in Kali Yuga. How is devotional service making my mind feel today? Have I felt gratification? In other words, Krishna has to gratify my senses, and then I'll be peaceful in bhakti. Even if you think like that, though, and you wholeheartedly serve Krishna, as Dhruva Maharaj demonstrates, you'll become purified and come to a higher understanding. As you know, akama sarva kama ma moksha kama udaradi. Whether you are full of material desires, free from all material desires, or lusty for liberation, engage in devotional service. But you have to engage in devotional service for those material desires to be cleansed. Yesterday, at Urban Yoga, I ventured out to make what I knew was going to be a very risky point. I did it with great fear and trepidation. I decided to talk about misery. Very dangerous on a Thursday night when the weekend is fast approaching. It's like about misery. So, I explained that regardless of our conceptions of misery, they're all inadequate and incomplete. The real understanding of misery is, I've accepted a material body, therefore there must be misery. Now, how many people can get to that root? Generally, everyone just looks at this thing that's happening in their life, that thing that's happening in their life. Well, that's misery. I want to avoid that. Who is thinking, because I have a body, therefore there is misery? That kind of intelligence is not given today. Prahlad Maharaj at 5 years old explained it. Tatsarumanyaya suyavarya dehina. My dear father, O best of the demons, the actual truth is that anyone who has accepted a material body must always be in anxiety, must always suffer. Let's get to the root of the situation. So you want to deal with your misery? No one likes to be miserable. Therefore, you should work hard so you don't get another body. As soon as you accept a material body, that is where the misery begins. So bhakti yoga gets to the root of the whole problem. And that's why you feel such resistance in your mind. That's why you feel so many monkeys on your shoulders. They are determined to keep you from solving the root of the problem. So that's why you feel this weight. Yeah? These monkeys you're carrying around, screaming at you, kicking you, biting you, scratching you. They don't want you to make the ultimate solution. No. Why worry about what body you have now? Just get some more money, get a new home entertainment system, widescreen TV, go to a different restaurant every weekend. eating food cooked by sinful persons, you'll be blissful. Because of these monkeys, we lose enthusiasm. That's why we have to constantly hear. Misery means acceptance of a material body. To get free from misery doesn't mean turn on an air conditioner in the summer or turn on a heater in the cold. Misery doesn't mean go to relieve misery, doesn't mean you go shopping. Or another person will solve all your needs, will solve all your inadequacies. Now, if you want to get rid of misery, don't take another material body. That's the real solution. Now you may say, oh, but my next body is so far away. I'm so young. I have so much time ahead. Really? Just a short time, your next body will come. Therefore, we have to think practically how to make it so I won't accept misery again. By accepting this body, I've accepted misery. So I tried to explain that last night. Some people were listening. They were intrigued. But this is the basic reality that we have to accept and then explain to others. Because deep in the consciousness is this view that I can counteract misery by adjusting my body and mind. This is the disease. And I'll also become very powerful and do things that will adjust the bodies and minds of my family and friends. And then there'll be world peace through sense gratification. This is our disease. Once you understand that no matter what you do with your body and mind, no matter how you adjust them, you haven't gotten rid of misery, then you'll be peaceful. It may take quite some years of performing devotional service before this truth hits home, but it's worth it. It is worth it. Yudhisthira Maharaj has mastered this truth. His brothers, the Pandavas, have mastered this truth. Therefore, Krishna says, and you are so self-controlled that you have conquered even me, who am unconquerable, for those who cannot control their senses.